it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
A lot going on in the world of sports. We had a great sports weekend last weekend. SEC football. Will it look like real football? Josh Furlong, KSL.com. He covers Utah and votes in the AP Top 25 poll. Joining us now, good follow on Twitter. Josh, thanks for making time for us. What's the reaction to the Pac-12 getting back to business in your country?
You know, it's funny because, obviously once the Pac-12 decided to postpone, everybody was a little quiet on Twitter and out here and everything. But ever since the announcement was made, it seems like everybody's pretty excited. Obviously, they wish they had more than seven games, but seems like everybody's ready to get going and just have a fun season.
I love Kyle Whittingham's tweet, game on. He seemed like he was chomping at the bit.
That guy, he's just always business. Like, there's no slowing him down. Like, you could tell him he's not going to play football for 2 years, and he's still prepping for that first game in 3 years from now. So, I mean, like, it's just funny to see. He's all business. There's nothing about him that can take a time off in some respects. So, he'll be ready to go. There's no questions about that.
The questions that came out of yesterday, what did you hear from Utah fans, Pac-12 fans, about that news conference and the developments that maybe raised questions?
A lot of it I still think has to do with some of the money aspects of it. This is obviously a big driver to the conference. And we talked to Mark Harlan, Utah's athletic director, about it today. And he kind of even reiterated the point that this wasn't about a money decision. I kind of have a hard time believing that to some extent. If I remember correctly, yesterday, I think it was Oregon's president that talked about saying that they weighed the cost benefits of being able to play in the fall versus playing in the spring. And really, in my eyes, it has to come down to the money. You obviously get into that college football playoff fund. You get the bowl games. Playing in the spring, there's no guarantee necessarily that you're going to get involved in that. And now, obviously, like the conference has wanted to make sure players are safe and have the daily testing and everything like that. But to me, it was very convenient to be able to have those opportunities to be able to play for money. And I understand what they're saying in theory, but you have to imagine that, you know, this is a huge driver of the conference and being able to know that they can actually recoup maybe some of the money that they were expected to lose.
Josh Furlong with us, KSL.com. How would a 9 a.m. kickoff go over with Utes fans?
You know, when it was announced last year, it was met with a lot of frustration because Utah, every once in a while, they'll get that noon game and the sun is blowing down on them and, you know, the August, September heat. And so there wasn't a lot of love for that. People wanted to tailgate. They wanted to do all that. But now with no tailgating really possible and no fans allowed in the stadium, I don't know. I can't get a sense necessarily of what people are feeling on that. I think it would definitely alter everything, and it would make people feel a little different. Maybe you watch the ESPN College Game Day or something and then go right into that game. I think that would be a surreal thought to be able to do that for most people. But last year, Whittingham had said that he's fine for it. You know, I mean, he'd love to start earlier, the better. The longer these games go, where we have these 8:30 kicks at night and all that, that kind of gets to him. So from a Utah perspective, that athletic department is ready to go. You put it at 9, put it at 10, Kyle Whittingham will have his team ready to go whenever.
Larry Scott is a slow-moving wildebeest, right? I mean, we all could nitpick him. He's an easy target. I my issues with him are well documented. But how did he perform yesterday? What could he have done better? What do you think he did well?
You know, that's a tough question because in name, yeah, he's doing probably what he's supposed to do, maybe even a little less than that. The thing is, I've always described Larry Scott as a true politician. He knows exactly what to say to kind of to appease the crowd, but doesn't necessarily give you any meat. And I think that was kind of similar there yesterday. I think it's going to be your next guest. Asked him a question about how, as being part of the College Football Playoff Commission and being able to kind of look at that, like, why are you not advocating for getting your team in the playoffs? And I think he's just really passive in that regard and in being able to advocate for the Pac-12. It very much so seems like we're going to take our time, we'll get there, nobody needs to worry, when everybody else in the conference is really frustrated and upset that, you know, you can't get a Pac-12 team into the College Football Playoffs, and you're not really advocating for your teams. And I understand teams have to actually play well to get there, but there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency from him to be able to support the football aspect of it. He obviously is big into the Olympic side of things, but there doesn't seem to be that rush. And I know you have to not rush in a pandemic necessarily, but there doesn't seem to be anything there. It just seems like he's passively sitting there while continuing to give himself more money.
We're talking to Josh Furlong, KSL.com, covers Utah. How are Utah fans maybe different than other Pac-12 fans? Do the Utes fans? I know it's one of the fan bases that actually was showing up and causing Utah to have to expand the stadium. But what drives that passion with Utah athletics?
It's a good question. I think some of that really just comes from for the longest time just being little brother to everybody, right? Like for the longest time, BYU just kicked the crap out of them for decades. And obviously Utah has the winning record all time, but I mean, Lavelle Edwards just took it to him for years. And so once they started to kind of get that glimmer of hope and started to kind of dominate, and you get the Urban Meyers, all those guys, and now Kyle Whittingham maintaining that success, there's a lot of maybe that chip on that shoulder that athletes like to talk about all that time, where, you know, fans think that they, you know, have to approve it. And now that Utah's, you know, pretty much proved it to some extent, obviously last year they laid an egg against Oregon in the conference championship, but there's a sense that, you know, Utah has arrived to some extent. Now, obviously there's still plenty of growth there, and it's still not where Utah fans would hope. But there's always this side that it's like, we'll take on anybody, we'll do whatever, kind of this gritty mentality. But yet I think sometimes fans kind of forget, you know, 10 years ago, they were in the Mountain West Conference. And so I think they expect to be considered an equal peer with everybody in the Pac-12. And I think for the most part, many aren't, you know, thinking that Utah is going to be this slouch team that's coming in. But I think there's kind of that dichotomy there where you have fans that kind of feel like they've arrived and they deserve everything that the USCs and the Oregons of the world have been given, but then not necessarily having the resume to back it up. And so there's kind of still that little brother mentality of where we have to be aggressive and we have to be passionate and we have to kind of show why we're here.
We're talking to Josh Furlong, KSL.com, covers Utah. The voting in the AP polls, the top 25 polls, how tricky is that given the staggered start by various conferences, the preseason polls that included Pac-12 teams and then suddenly didn't? How hard has that been?
Honestly, like, this has been one of the hardest times. And up until, 2 weeks ago, I mean, we only had 76 teams to really look at. And so to some extent, it felt really weird to be putting some of these teams that traditionally wouldn't be ranked there. You're putting the Louisianas of the world, which, you know, don't get me wrong, they've been great this year, but they traditionally aren't going to fall in a top 25. And so it's taking a little shift to kind of adjust to not having, you know, the Ohio States or the Michigans of the world in there. And then all of a sudden this week, kind of the floodgates are opened where all these teams are going to be allowed in there. So for me, I'm still trying to wrap my head around how I'm going to do that, given that, you know, it's going to be a month plus until we see a lot of these teams. So it's hard to say, let's say, like, an Ohio State shouldn't be at least one or number two, But then what about these other teams? I mean, how do you slot Oregon in there, for example? I mean, you have, I can't remember where I had them. I think I had them in the top 10 in the preseason poll, but where do you put them? They don't play for another month. So do they deserve to be up there? I think for me, that's going to be a real challenge to kind of weigh how these teams go in there. Do I project it as what I believe these teams can be, or do I judge it based on what's actually being done on the field? So I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine at this point of how I'm going to look at it. And I think come tomorrow night when I really put it all together, it's going to be interesting.
You know, it's always interesting to me to see how you're lobbied, what instructions you get. What do they tell you about voting? What instructions do you get? And once people figure out you've got to vote, what is that like on your Twitter timeline, your email account, and other places?
The AP, for the most part, I mean, they're pretty open with how they let a person vote. They know that people have different styles. I think not everybody's the same. John Wilner, I believe, he kind of ranks them on a week-by-week basis, while still kind of maintaining consistency of a top 25. But he'll look at them and say, okay, you know, maybe a Wisconsin who was ranked 15th in the consensus poll, maybe they played like a 25th ranked team. A lot of people will kind of do it otherwise. And the AP doesn't seem to care to some extent. Obviously, like, they don't want to just have so much fluidity that it makes it really difficult to tabulate, even though it's all done by a computer. But, it's just basically making sure that the teams, are doing well, that you're not just putting favorites in there, that there's no bias. If they were to suspect any bias, then, you know, you'd be removed as a voter, which, to my knowledge, I haven't seen any, at least since I've been a voter. So it varies. Some teams will move down 15 spots for a loss or a win, and so it's kind of interesting that way. But once people find out that I have that vote, it depends on what team you've probably disrespected or something. I think early on I got some Notre Dame disrespect and some Army disrespect. I didn't have them in my first poll, even though they were 2-0. Last year, UCF, until they lost a couple games, their fans were pretty vocal. So it just depends on the fan base. And for the most part, people, it's like any comment board out there. They get mad. They think you're an idiot. But, I mean, that's nothing new. So it doesn't necessarily, I wouldn't say weigh on me, but it doesn't change my opinions. But there may be times where I look at it and say, well, maybe did I miss something? And then I'll give them a second look. But I can't say that it's actually changed my opinion on anything.
What do you expect from the schedule? Because Pac-12 saying schedule come out next week. Utah in the South Division will get one game against the North Division. Who's that North Division team Utah fans want to play?
Definitely not Oregon. That'll be the first one that they'll tell you that they don't want to face. Oregon has always kind of been that little thing that's just basically keeping them from getting what they want. I mean, truthfully, if you could pick a team, maybe an Oregon State or a Washington State, who's obviously got a new head coach and trying to go through things. Stanford, they seem to match up well with over the last few years. They're both physical, but somehow Utah continues to dominate David Shaw's team. So I don't think they're necessarily fearful of a team. It's other than Oregon. I think that one, maybe even Washington. Washington's obviously had their numbers, but depending on what Jimmy Lake's able to do up there, I mean, it's kind of anyone's guess. So I think anybody but Oregon at that point.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because, that game will count in the standings, and that there's going to be a big difference there. If Utah draws Oregon and USC draws Oregon State, the Utah fans aren't going to like that. And did the Pac-12 do the right thing by making every game matter, or was there no way around that?
Yeah, I talking to Mark Harlan today, like I said, Utah's athletic director, he said, the conference wasn't necessarily all in agreement on that. And I think it's to that exact reason that you are going to get where you're going to have somebody playing that Oregon State versus an Oregon. And it's going to be a really difficult task to be able to manage that. I don't know. I understand why you want to count it because it adds a lot of I guess, parity, if you want to say that. But at the same time, it doesn't. So I don't know. For me, I think it probably would have just been easier to say stick within your own division like it traditionally is. But, maybe you throw that in there just to add some wonkiness to it and maybe allow some of it. But to me, it seems like a really difficult thing to maintain. But at the end of the day, I think teams are just going to have to deal with it and say, you know what, we got a crappy schedule this year. Doesn't really matter. At least we're playing football. I don't know. That's the best that I can come up with.
Yeah, and the one positive that I saw yesterday was, you know, they're not going to interfere now with spring football if they can play these seven games without interruption and it, you know, it comes off smoothly and they can close the book on 2020 and hopefully 2021 beyond will feel a lot more normal. Josh Furlong, KSL in Utah. I appreciate your time, Josh. Thanks for what you do, man.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate your stuff.
All right. Josh Furlong from Utah. Next week on the show, we're going to have athletic directors from all 12 Pac-12 schools. That's right. We're getting them all. We're going to do it all. We're going to round table with the ADs. If you have questions you want me to ask the athletic directors, you can tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. If you want to subscribe to the Baldface Truth newsletter, you want it weekly in your inbox, well, you got to go to baldfacetruth.com. It'll pop up and you can enter your own email address and you can subscribe right there. Leave it right here. Culligan Water Cooler Report, brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. We do it every day.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Question comes in via email. John, I'd love to see you ask a question. Why is it only safe for Oregon and Oregon State to play in the state of Oregon? What about all the other college teams and other levels, high school, youth, etc.? If it's safe enough for Oregon and Oregon State, Governor Kate Brown says it should be safe enough for everyone, right? We're one of the few states not playing high school football. What's the impact on kids and those scholarships? With most of the country playing, slots on college teams are going to fill up before our teams even hit the field, stripping potential opportunities to attend colleges for a lot of kids. What a travesty. Let them play. Here's my answer to that, because I have been in contact with the governor's office. The protocols that Oregon and Oregon State have presented to the governor's office and the Oregon Health Authority include rapid result testing. So I think if local high school teams wanted to play tomorrow and they could present a plan that said, all right, we're going to spend $22 a day on rapid testing, I think you'd get immediate approval. I do think momentum is your friend. I do think the high school and small colleges and community colleges and even Portland State and University of Portland have admitted that they're watching the Pac-12 conference to see what happens inside that conference. And this is all encouraging stuff. As for the scholarship stuff, I want to address that because I think there's a big misconception that not being able to participate is going to be a severe disadvantage for high school kids. I think it sucks. I think high school kids that wanted to play and love to play and love to participate are not going to get a chance to play. But I've talked to the major college coaches. They say, yes, it'll be more challenging. They say, yes, they're going to have to pay closer attention in the spring. Also, the bigger obstacle, I think, for high school kids isn't just that they're not going to be able to participate, but potentially the returning players who are, the NCAA granting extra eligibility to some players because of missed seasons has caused problems in basketball, especially because you've got kids that are going to play extra years of eligibility or have been granted extra eligibility. So I think it sucks.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.